Is over here, we're on God's answer to Eve. And the question is, what over here, he says 12, 13, 14, and 15. 38, 12, 13, 14, 15. It seems to be that he's saying that do you understand, do you have any understanding? He says, were you there when I created the world? He said, what does he mean? And then he says to him, to grab onto the ends of the earth so that the wicked should be thrown off. Or he says that, 15, and the wicked shall be prevented from seeing their light. What does he mean over there? What is he indicating? What is he indicating? He's indicating one thing. He's indicating that the Ashkacha, again, I mean, see, that's why I don't see anything new here. But he's indicating that the Hashgacha works in a way that it has to mesh with the laws of nature. That's what the indication is. The Hashgacha has to mesh with it. That's why he said to him, do you understand how the world was created, the foundations of the earth? Do you have any knowledge of that? Which means that do you understand and that the wicked should be able to, we should be able to just grab the ends of the earth and shake the wicked off? Which means that it's not just a simple thing to do to destroy the wicked, but on the contrary, this all has to be built in to the system. This had to be built in with tremendous chachma into the system of nature, into the laws of nature. It seems to be in line with the Chazal that maintain that everything was created before. Chazal say that the Nisim at Yamsuf. So Chazal maintain that the Nisim at Yamsuf weren't just something that occurred at the time, but it was built into the creation. You see, it was built into the creation. So, therefore, what God is saying to him is that in terms of, do you understand, have you any idea what tremendous amount of chachma it takes in order to have the Rishayim wiped off the face of the earth, built into the system of the physical laws? You see how that works. Were you there when I created it? Now, when he says to him, were you there when I created the world, he means like this. He means, do you really understand the foundations of the basic fundamentals of the laws of nature? Now, if you understand the basic fundamentals of the laws of nature, then you'd be able to understand that certain things cannot occur. Not so simply like you think. You know what I mean? Certain things basically cannot occur. Nevertheless, I built into the system of the in the system of the universe is still implanted the idea of justice and the destruction of the wicked. You see? So, but certain things, you understand what I mean? That's what, in other words, he's showing that there's a limitation insofar as what can be done based upon the upon
his own knowledge.
There's a limitation in terms of what the laws of the universe. And nevertheless, God wouldn't have created the universe if a certain amount of justice could not be implanted in order to make the universe a worthwhile situation for man. Do you know what I mean? Do you understand what I mean? Basically, it's similar to what was said by Eliyahu. I mean, isn't it? Here he keeps asking him questions over here. This is Tezayin, Yudzayin, Yudches, okay? Yudtes, all these Havasa, Chav Beis, all these things. Why does he keep asking these questions?
Yeah.
Over there in Chav Beis and Chav Gimel, he comes back to the same idea. That, did you come into the treasuries of the snow and the hail, which I preserved, which I kept for the day of, what's the word?
The day of battle and war.
Time of trouble, against the day of battle and war.
Yeah.
Which seems to be that God predestined that certain physical phenomena should come out at a certain time when they will be used to save the righteous people and to destroy the wicked.
Is that against the realm? Right?
Then he goes back to the other things, like two themes. Then he goes back to the other thing. They ask him personally, questions he have personally. Two themes. First of all, he shows that that the world was made in a certain way, that justice will always work out, that the two the laws of nature and the laws of the Ashkacha are worked out together as one unified thing? Into your mind, the part about the ostrich, it's a Pasuk Lamed Tes. Any Perek Lamed Tes, a Pasuk, you get from Pasuk Yud Gimel through Yitres, through Yud Zion, rather. Yeah. So the thing is that you would think that they wouldn't be able to continue in existence. Nevertheless, if you understood the whole system, you'd understand why the ostrich has to reproduce this way and how it's worked out, balanced out, so that it continues to reproduce. You know what I mean? On the contrary, it's showing you that it doesn't understand how it works. He doesn't understand the basic ideas of how these things are interrelated with the whole system, the whole ecological system. You know what I mean?
Maybe.
That pasuk mem aleph gimel, miyigdimani v'ashalim tachas kol hashamayim lihu. See, that pasuk is again an indication that that with God you can't have a system of justice like you have with man. Because with man you can say, look, man, like the government has a system of justice. They say, we give you this land, therefore you have to abide by certain rulings. With God, there's no one. God is the eternal. So there's no one. There's no system outside of Him. So you can't say that He's operating in the wrong way. You can't say that He's. You can't say He's unjust in the sense that a man is unjust. You know what I mean? That's me, Yigdimani Vashalim. Tachas Kol Hashamayim Lihu. I create everything. So you can't. This whole idea, the system of justice, is a social system. Social system has to be based upon a system which is created. The individuals in the system only have rights because there's certain rights were given out by the system. But with God, there's no system preceding it. So you can't say that He has certain rights. That's the idea that he's saying over there. Go ahead. I'll tell you, the question is, what does God add? Right? Okay. I think, well, let me put it this way. Before, I think maybe we could have an approach as to what it, what the answer of God was. Okay? Just an approach. When God, in the end of the Sefer, about 10 lines from the bottom, he says, and also in the Pirush, he says, if you take a look, that when God first answered Eve, after first God answered Eve, and then he speaks directly to Eve. In Mem, it says, Vayana Shem Sivayama, Haroivim Shedai Yisor, Mochich Lakan Yanena, he tells Eve to answer, right? Is it right to argue with God? Vayana Eve is Hashem Vayoma. So the Ebenezer says that he didn't answer correctly. See? And he says like this, he says, Oz Ona Eve Tshuva Einena Nachona. He answered not a good answer. Kilo hitzdik Hashem, because he didn't justify God. Rak Omar, he only said, Hine achrish v'lo adabr, says, I can't speak. Al kein vayan Hashem shenis, that's why God answered him a second time. Min asa'ara. V'hizkir behemos, that's the monsters. Shehu shem behemo gvuraso. Shehu, Gvuraso shehu beyabasha. Gam hiskir gvuras leviyasin. Oh, so he answered the behemoth that shows the strength in the land, and also he showed the leviyasin, which is in the ocean. Vatam ki ilu omar le'iyuv, eich gavata kenegdi, al kain hiskir ela gedolim, vo'inyin, hine bibriyosai v'loben echbadim ha'olionim rak b'chayas shebehem ba'oritz of mayim tach zlosh, lo suchalam l'shtabed behem v'lo l'chros, okay, so then he goes on. There's two lines. Vine Amar Hashem ki hine yesh gufos baretz imcha v'heim giborim imcha lo suchalem v'lama gavol lipcha al kein hoda iiv bachron. Therefore, iiv in the end said v'amar al kein emas v'nichamti al ofer v'efer v'zos yanachona shadiber iiv bachrona. See, that was the right answer. The second answer that iiv gave. All right.
So it comes with an
answer. See, the thing is like this. Eliyahu's answer was the correct answer. But the only thing is, that's why I believe like this, that when Hashem spoke to Eve, it wasn't that there was a new answer there. You see, Eliyahu's answer was the correct one. But after Eliyahu's answer, Eve, it seems, didn't embrace the answer. He just had nothing to question. He had nothing to ask on it. You see? But it left him cold. He just didn't respond. Now, when God came to Eve for the purpose, the reason why the last part is that God came to Eve was in order to show him that in order to remove from him the difficulties that he had personally with accepting the answer. You understand what I mean? That's what the that's why the Rambam doesn't mention God's answer, because God's answer is not really an answer. God's answer was the personal relationship with Eve. What was the purpose? The purpose was like this, was to demonstrate that once Eve perceived Eliyahu's answer, you see, then the Ashkacha related to him.
That's really what it was. You understand what I mean? And the Ashgacha related to him in a way, in the greatest way possible. Because what is really the greatest way that the Ashgacha can relate to a person? To teach him. That's right, to further his knowledge, to teach him. It means that Iyuv was Zocha, because of the way he understood, even though he didn't accept the answer, but it raised him to the level when he recognized recognition of the possibility of Elihu's answer, raised him to a level where he was deserving of the Ashgacha. And then God related to him in the greatest way that the Ashgacha could relate to a person, as a teacher, you see, and he taught him. That's the last part of the Aviv. Now, of course, what remains is to discover exactly what the difficulties were in Eve's mind that God removed with his answer. You see, with God's answer to Eve. You know what I mean? There must have been something there which prevented Eve from embracing Elihu's answer, which God removed through his discussion with Eve. That's what we have to understand in this last part of Eve. You know what I mean? That's why the Evan Ezra says that first Eve didn't answer properly, God spoke to him again. What is that? What does that indicate? That the reason why that when God spoke to him the first time, he didn't answer properly, he just said, well, I can't ask any questions. You see, but he didn't really fully accept it. That was the second time. There's one more point here in the Evan Ezra, you see? There's one more point I want to mention in the Evan Ezra, and that's like this. That the Evan Ezra says the first answer wasn't a good one, but the second one was good. What was the difference between the first answer and the second one? In the first one, he says, I don't know. But in the second one, the Evan Ezra says, he says he was matzdik. He says in the first one, he wasn't matzdik, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He just says, I don't know. In the second one, there was a positive tzidduk adin. It's the real tzidduk adin, you see? So it comes out like this, that if after God answered him the second time, it wasn't just... Really, Elihu showed him a system that he couldn't question. But that's not Tzidduk Adin. That's not Tzidduk Adin yet. In the end, there was Tzidduk Adin, where he recognized positively that God is just. See? That's interesting. Let's just try to put it together. There's one difference between the first answer that God gives and the second answer that God gives. The first answer, what's the difference? Essentially. That's right, the questions, exactly. In the first one, there's the questions, and the second one, there's no question. Now, the questions are directed against who? Against Eve. And the first one seems to be, the first one's straight questions against Eve. In the second one, he doesn't have any questions.
Well, he
doesn't have any questions.
The result is to break that.
It talks about the powerful animals on the land and in the sea, in the second one. Now, in other words, I guess what we should say is like this, that there are two things, that were standing in the way of Eve's understanding of God's Ashgacha. One was the ego, you see, a further breakdown of the ego. That's why he keeps on asking these questions. Were you there? Did you do this? That's a breakdown of the ego. And in response to that, Eve answered that I can't answer. That's what the Levin is. He says, Kalosi, Marshi Vekla. He recognizes. So God got through with him with this point, so that the ego was broken down, but that wasn't that was only one part. That still wasn't the full thing. Then it was necessary to give this description of the Leviathan and the powerful ox. Why? In order to elicit the Tzidduk Adin. I mean, this you see. These are the two aspects. One was the ego, and one was the other phenomena. There's two things. I'm just trying to get a little closer to what the solution is. There's one more thing that I think. What is this monster? What is the monster? See? Yeah, the monster is really the force of nature. That's the answer. The monster is a force of nature. But why does it give a mushel as a monster? The reason is like this. That's why he talks about how powerful it is, how strong it is, all these different qualities it has. Because what he's trying to show in the mushel is that it isn't. See, a person imagines that these different, well, there are all different isolated things going on, isolated factors. And when he shows that it's a monster, he shows that it's like one being, and that all these different things that occur are manifestations come from one source. That's the point. That's the point of the monster. You know what I mean? that everything that occurs, in other words, you take a look at what occurs and say, hey, it could have been, this could have happened today, it could have been a rainy day, it could have been this type of day, different things. You look at it as isolated features, you see. When the monster, the idea of the monster unifies nature and shows that it's one unified, it's like one unified being. You wouldn't ask how come this does, you wouldn't say, well, I could have had part of this. You would realize you take a part of, you take a chunk of the animal over there, the animal's going to respond. It's all one unified being. So he's, so what he's showing, and the monster is showing, the monster really is nature, it's a force of nature. What he's showing is that it's one unified thing. And all the things that you see, the different things that you imagine, that this could have happened, that could have happened, this could have isolated, you isolate in your mind, there's only in the mind because you don't have the knowledge. But if you really had the knowledge, you'd be able to see it's one unified whole. One unified whole. And nothing can stand before it. You see? That's what the marshal of the monster is. What? In other words, it's showing you the immutability of the manifestations of nature, which a person feels are very easily changed. Like, why couldn't things be this way for me? Do you know what I mean? He thinks, oh, why did this have to happen? This thing could have happened to me. Could have been this way. He thinks it could have been because he doesn't understand the immutability. He doesn't understand the system that he's dealing with. It's one unified whole. And it's immutable. You know what I mean? That's what he means when he talks about its strength. The strength is the immutability of the forces of nature. That's the strength. Yeah? It's, if it's an individual manifestation, you might look at a leaf falling down from the tree as a very fragile type of phenomena, something that could have happened, could not have happened. But if you recognize that this is tied in with the very, this is only a manifest, one manifest, small manifestation of the powerful forces of nature, so then you'd recognize that that leaf falling from the tree is an immutable, just as immutable effect as volcanic eruption. You can't change it. It has the same power. It's tied in with all one force. One immutable has the same strength, it's the same power as any other part of nature. The only thing is that in your mind it looks like a little small phenomenon.
If you say the tail of the animal movement,
the reason what?
Exactly.
So yeah, the reason why you think that things could be this or things could be that way is because you isolate it in your mind. Ah, but if you recognize that this is all a manifestation of this powerful force, you recognize that this is just as an immutable phenomenon as any other powerful phenomenon. That's a pasuk memal of pasuk dalet in Metzudas David. Would seem to support what we're saying, that the monster is the Lord's nature. Because it says, I'll show you how it's constructed and how it stands in opposition to the other creatures. Because this is really the source, the force of nature, how powerful. And then also it says, the pasuk says that, where's the pasuk?
It says
in pasuk beis also. If you can't stand against him, how can you stand against me? Because I am the source of the, that's very good, it says, mi higdimani vashalim. That I am the source of this force. I am the source of this force.